Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to address this committee. My name is Rashmi Ranganath, and I work for Public Knowledge. Public Knowledge is a nonprofit public interest advocacy group that is dedicated to promoting a balanced copyright regime and an open communications regime. And I'd like to address a couple of issues that we think would be appropriate for a study by the committee. While we as a country accept the granting of exclusive rights and that they can spur progress in knowledge and creativity, there is no linear correlation between the extent of protection and the amount of creativity. Too rigid a network of exclusive rights can prevent flow of knowledge and information. So I'd like to address a few topics for further that are ripe for further study and investigation. First, the length of copyright terms and the associated problem of orphaned works. Second, the social cost of the anti-circumvention provisions. Third, the erosion of the first sale doctrine through technology and through overextended licenses. Fourth, the increasing scale of statutory damages. And fifth, the costs of...
Why don't you go a little bit slower here?
Sorry. I'm so sorry. Do you want me to... The third one was the erosion of the first sale doctrine.
First sale, okay.
The fourth one was statutory damages. Mm-hmm. And the fifth is the costs of internet intermediary liability. So, internet intermediary liability.
Yes.
So with respect to the first issue, the optimal term of copyright protection, copyright terms have been extended since the statute of 1790, and most of the term extensions have been justified based on assertions that they incent creativity. Congress has also expressed the belief in the context of the Copyright Term Extension Act and before that longer terms would also provide incentive to copyright owners to restore older works. Yet there is little empirical support for these assertions, these propositions. On the other hand, many have pointed out that the actual commercial life of works is much shorter than the term of protection. For example, a 2005 study by the Library of Congress with respect to sound recordings created before 1965 found that the commercial life of many sound recordings was much shorter than the term of protection, and they were not being reissued by rights holders, and hence were not available for those interested in the works. The long copyright duration has also been set to cause the problem of orphan works. So as a result of the short commercial life of works as well as the long copyright term, many works of historical, social, and cultural significance become unavailable to scholars, historians, educators, and the general public. In view of these problems, a reexamination of the appropriate term of copyright protection is warranted. The second issue I'd like to address is the social costs of using technological protection measures to prevent infringement. The DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, imposes a ban on circumvention of technological protection measures, arguably even when the circumvention is in service of a completely legal use. However, public interest advocates, including we at Public Knowledge, believe that the experience with the use of technological protection measures backed by the DMCA demonstrates several shortcomings. First of all, such measures inadvertently prevent not only infringing uses, but also lawful uses. For example, not only is an infringer prevented from copying a copy-protected DVD, but also elementary school teachers will be prevented from making short excerpts of DVD for purposes of illustration in classroom. Second, the triennial rulemaking process, meant to provide some relief from the prohibitions of the DMCA, is burdensome to users. Third, the prohibition on circumvention lets publishers restrict, under penalty of statutory damages, behaviors completely legal under the Copyright Act. For these reasons, after a decade under this regime, a number of questions about the effectiveness, values, and the costs of anti-circumvention and the exemption process need to be addressed, and a second look needs to be taken. The third issue I would like to address is the sale of is the state of the first sale doctrine. The doctrine allows users to dispose of particular copies of copyrighted works. The purpose of the doctrine has been to preserve users' rights to alienate their own property. It has allowed libraries to lend works and for secondary markets to exist. However, in recent years, the doctrine has been challenged on various grounds through overly burdensome end-user license agreements, EULAs. Copyright owners claim that they have licensed physical copies of works rather than sold the works. This claim is also made with respect to sales of digital downloads of works. By creating the presumption that users do not own works they have paid for, drafters of these EULAs can sidestep the first sale doctrine and control post-sale distribution. The gradual erosion of the first sale doctrine has consequences. It prevents the existence of secondary markets where copyright works are sold at lower prices to those who cannot afford the price of the original. It can be used to prevent secondary markets in goods that are not themselves the subject of copyright protection, but have signage or packaging attached to them, affixed to them. It also threatens to penalize copyright law. So the committee should consider these and other questions as they relate to the first sale doctrine. Also, the committee should consider the costs conveyed onto consumers by requiring them to read and understand end-user license agreements attached to many of the copyrighted works. The fourth issue I'd like to address is statutory damages. The current copyright statutory damages regime has resulted in extremely large damages awards in many cases. Often these awards bear no relationship to the actual damage suffered by the copyright owner. Statutory damages were created in an environment where commercial infringement was the norm, where the infringement of one work thousands of times over would create a large presumptive loss for the copyright owner. However, in the instance of file sharing cases today, we're commonly seeing many files being infringed just once with much smaller actual damages. Yet the statutory damages regime, which attaches massive dollar amounts per work infringed, is ill-suited to create effective and proportional penalties in these cases. These huge awards have a tendency to chill innovation by discouraging introduction of products and services that facilitate new uses of copyrighted works. They also chill the use of orphan works. In view of these concerns, we must examine the current statutory damages regime and its effectiveness in curbing infringement. Also currently unknown is the number of instances where works were not used for fear of exposure to the statutory damages regime. And the final issue I would like to address is the cost of third-party liability. The Internet Service Provider Safe Harbor provisions of codified in Section 512 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act have facilitated the growth of the Internet by relieving ISPs from liability for infringing actions of their customers if they abide by certain conditions. The safe harbor for Internet access providers is premised on the notion that these providers are mere conduits of information and cannot interfere with its contents. However, with changes in technology, the idea that ISPs are mere conduits is being challenged. As a result, some have called upon ISPs to actively prevent infringement on their networks by using filtering technologies such as deep packet inspection or other monitoring systems. Such filtering raises a number of concerns from the consumer perspective, and the committee could address these concerns. For instance, what effect would content filtering have on consumers' free speech interests and privacy? From the copyright perspective, what is the possibility that automatic filters would be able to detect and prevent throttling of fair use? What are the due process implications of looking at communications without a court order? What effect would filtering requirements have on innovative services that are not able to accommodate proposed technology mandates and its associated expenses? Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to address you, and I will be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.